It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order all the merch from all the shows over on Social Suplex over at chopped-tees.com. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of a man who might have a slightly hoarse voice because he did DM a Dungeons & Dragons game last night, which may have gotten a little tense. I ended up going for a little bit longer than I was anticipating. I woke up today, I was like, I meant to be doing my recording tonight. Oopsie daisy. Plays had a great time. That's always good to know. You have to do so much prep. I'm paying for it now, though. I'm paying for it now. Wish me luck at getting through all of this stuff. You get 30 minutes. I speak for a solid hour. So let's see how this goes. But this is the first show of the year, of the Netflix era, of the streaming era, of me covering both Smackers and Monday Night Raw. For me, being a dirty European, I am watching both SmackDown and Raw on Netflix, loading up Netflix, going to there to watch my WWE. The novelty of that hasn't worn off yet. It still feels different and new. Like, this isn't new. Oh, this is different. But it does mean that both shows are like full shows for me. Your SmackDown over in America. So yeah, it airs for 2 hours, but you get like an hour and a half, an hour and 20 minutes of actual wrestling content. So if you don't watch the show live, you really only got like an 80-minute show to get through. No, not for me. I didn't watch SmackDown live, and my SmackDown is actually 2 hours. It's quite a lot. It's like, I don't think I've ever watched a WWE TV show that is actually 2 hours, like on the dot. So it's a unique experience I'm going to have to get used to. Monday Night Raw this week was closer to 2.5 hours, so there was actual gaps in the production. But I think the phrase was that there's going to be a 3-hour block for Raw to air every single week, but there's no pressure to actually fill it with 3 hours worth of content, which I would much prefer. Because some weeks there just isn't anything. Some weeks it'd be really nice if they just didn't have to fit a show within a 3-hour block and they could just finish when they've got through what they needed to. Just be nice. So if they make use of that, please do make use of it, WWE, of that more kind of lenient nature, so that you don't have to go close to 3 hours every single week. Absolutely fine. So anyway, let's jump on over to the actual content of the shows as we build towards the Royal Rumble, the first big event for WWE on the Netflix platform. So let's see how it goes for them. What are they doing in terms of building towards the Royal Rumble? What cards are they stacking? How much are they stacking? Well, as we tell so far, it feels like they're properly stacking this Rumble. To prep for this show, I rewatched the 2024 and 2023 Rumbles, so I can remember what this era is working with so far. So in terms of the build for this one, I'm able to kind of draw parallels of like the different kind of structure of who was in the Rumbles and what this might mean for the actual match this year. So anyway, let's jump on over, first of all, to Friday Night Smackers. Live on Netflix for me, on USA for them, from Portland, Oregon. It's time to hear the pro-Roman folk applaud Cody. Kind of makes us like, yes, you helped out Roman. We have got some respect for you. We've also got your backs in certain situations. But ultimately, Roman is going to take the title from you. Is the message coming from the OG Bloodline lads. For me, a really good contrast against the whole Kevin Owens thing, against the Drew McIntyre thing. Guys who were good cheered babyfaces had to go up against the baddie heels. But now the baddie heels are good guys. So these guys switch sides. And they're about to be just this way. Heyman applauding because, yes, Roman does want that title match. And Heyman was the one who got to announce that Roman has declared himself for the Royal Rumble. Like, hey, last year was lacking in some star power for the first, like, 20 entrants. Because I don't know whether it was a Rumble that was actually a lot more mid-card than I'd realised before it started. Or is it a badly structured Rumble, meaning that the first 20 minutes are actually quite boring? I think I want to err on the latter side, because for me it's a complete mistake to have all of your big lads right at the end. And Jey Uso was the closest, but he didn't really come like near to that group of guys who they were painting as, well, these guys could win. Like, Jey Uso never got to that point. And the year previously had an amazing start, and then I'm surprised. I had really fond memories of 2023. I just hadn't gone back and watched it. So when I went back and I watched it, it's like, oh, actually, no, yeah, there's a big portion of this one that's just kind of mid. After the Brock Lesnar stuff happens and he's chucked out, it's actually quite a mid rumble from that point up until like some of the bigger names start to come in, and then you finally end with Cody. And it isn't until you get into that final flow that it really wakes up, and I feel like it's really fondly remembered because of just how good the Gunter and Cody Rhodes closing part is. But in my mind, the rest of it was good. First half of it, that is a decently paced first half of a Rumble. You have your big thing in the middle, which is like a big angle that plays out. That's what last year's was missing. It's just kind of like get through the mid-card until you get to, I think Drew McIntyre was at like 19 or 20. You get to that point, and then all the biggest names then arrive in their later 20s. And then the ending, they tried with CM Punk, Cody Rhodes. Obviously, Punk was injured, so the fact he finished it out is one thing. It just means it was not a very exciting finish. But yes, Roman Reigns announced, and John Cena announced. Oh no, I will spoil Monday Night Raw. CM Punk announced, Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins. But to have the trio of CM Punk, John Cena, and Roman Reigns within this Rumble already, I feel like they are kind of stacking this Rumble for that first Netflix era. I don't know what kind of level of surprise to expect, because that's something the Triple H 2 Rumbles so far haven't really had. That hasn't really been a surprise entrant. One of them's got Booker T. I think that was last year. And really, that was like in the middle of a load of mid-card things, which one after the other. Then you get Booker T. Okay, someone with the company, though, who I see all the time. So, yes, I personally always pop when I see Booker in his ring gear. Like, yeah, I loved you back in the day. But with the overall kind of Rumbles, like, Triple H hasn't actually done any true surprises in his Rumbles yet. It's kind of like the way that he puts the rest of his shows. So it's like, oh yeah, it all makes sense, where every single character's kind of there and everyone gets a spot in the Rumble. But that does mean it's slightly less interesting. Because it's fair to say, especially as somebody making a commentary on it, the absolute wackiness of the Vince era give a lot to talk about. The shows were awful. Absolutely awful. But, you know, there's something to talk about. Grumpy Kevin then came out in the crowd, ruined the friendly butt-patting that was going off in the ring between Cody and Paul Heyman, shifting swiftly into what Cody will be doing at the Rumble. Kevin Owens' feud has made it all the way to the Rumble. The Codester into the crowd, and the fans got themselves a wee brawl to the back. We didn't follow them, because we stayed in the ring, because suddenly Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga showed up to confront Paul Heyman with a, for me, a nice little additional visual of Cody's title dropped in the ring. So the whole angle plays out, and you see that WWE Championship line there. Everyone's favourite Bloodline member, Jimmy Uso, makes the save. Hey, he's definitely above Tongaloa. If we're ranking it, I don't think that's close. Cody eventually made his way back to the ring. Guess he dealt with KO or escaped or something. So tonight he's also going to be dealing with the Blood Boys. Fatu in particular getting the trading blows and stare down. Something tells me that man is in for a significant heating over 2025. Consistently getting great reactions. Spend time heating him up first. Let it boil. Let the fans naturally gravitate towards him. So far they're doing a good job. It's like they're turning up the simmer at the moment. But we'll jump to what happens in that tag main event later. First, I'm going to go to the United States Championship. Shinsuke Nakamura versus LA Knight. Watching on Netflix, I finally have enough HD to say that LA Knight is definitely too oily. You don't need to be that oily, bruh. What are you doing? Anyway, Shinsuke countered that by wearing clothes. Oh, he's such a clever man. He's such a clever counter. And that's why he's the champion, folks. He sees a big, muscly, oily fecker. He was like, I'll just wear a shirt, mate. Countered you. Problem solved. The match itself was pretty, generically the flow you would expect, especially from like a WWE Teddy title match. I'm not going to remember it after I've edited this show, but I will be able to say that it certainly did happen. Each lad got their time to flow. Knight got to counter Knackers a fair few times in a slight mirror to their Survivor Series match. Kinshasa attempt blocked, BFT blocked. Shinsuke finally hit his charge, but only for the lad to roll to the ropes for the leg rope rake. The finish possibly before us after Knackers charged his knee into an exposed turnbuckle and Knight got his chance to nail the BFT. But this is a WWE Teddy match, don't you know? Tama Tonga and Jacob Fatu interfered, beating up Knight after the man got involved in security's attempt to kick out the Blood Boys out of the building earlier in the night. Cody and Jimmy were the two to actually come out and fend off the boys. And the show did still need a main event. The main event of Cody Rhodes and Jimmy Uso versus Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga. I saw this as a cheeky little test to see if Fatu could hold the aura. And yeah, you bet your ass he could. If anything, I was infinitely more interested in he and Tama than when Solo's running with his main character syndrome. Gah, Solo's the worst kind of D&D player. Let the rest of your Bloodline adventuring posse get in there, shipmate. 12 minutes till we're off the air. Time to get to it, chaps. Purpose built for the hot reaction to be Cody and Fatu standing opposite each other in the ring. Little feelers of interest like, do you want this? Do you want to do some Fatu? But we also needed to end on Cody and KO brawling, so you only get the one tease before we kick into the final run. Cody's on-site promise cost him the match, as he just immediately left Jimmy to chase after his Rumble challenger. Jimmy got to give it a go, but I keep calling Jacob Fatu the difference maker for a reason. Big Jacob breaking up the pin after the Uso splash before winning with his awesome pop-up moonsault. Speaking of, KO and Cody brawled on back out into the arena and onto a big box. Two pre-cut tables waiting. Unfortunately for Cody, he was slightly behind Kevin on the fall, so he just ate wooden concrete. It's like, oh, poor lad. That didn't look super nice to take. The tables are pre-cut. It kind of cushioned the fall. Kevin's nose first, and then Cody's like, oh, well, I'm in the air currently. There's nothing I can do. And the poor lad. Before I jump on to the next segment, we'll say that the match for the Royal Rumble was made, and it is officially a ladder match. I don't know if that was made previously, because I haven't watched SmackDown since I last talked about it on this show, so it's been a while. But it will be Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens for the championship in a ladder match. The new WWE Women's Champion, Tiffy Time, officially begins. Earlier in the show, we got an unhappy Nia with Candice LeRae, promising to go out and congratulate the new champion herself. It was Byron Saxton in a pretty pink blazer in the ring to interview the new champion, who just shrieks, "It's Tiffy Time." What a Tiffy turn of events, am I right? That's not a me bit. She said that. She said that shit. Went on national television and said that piece of shit. Like, only a talent as good as her could make that shit line work. just like Jesus Christ. Half turning goody, half bragging about conning the former champion. I say turning goody. It might have just been just her leaning into the initial reaction of cheers before just reverting back to what her character is. Talking about stealing the title off of Nia after a successful plan. Put some respect on my name and tell me what time it is. Honestly, I'm kind of happy the title win didn't just completely swing allegiance to being an out-and-out goodie. For me, that very rarely works. Nia came out and got to say, "You ungrateful little shit." It's like, no, don't bleep it. God damn it. Even, you're on Netflix. Even on the Netflix feed, you didn't get to hear that. You don't need to mute it now. Netflix don't care. Nia delivered her lines like a woman who had just recently read her lines. Demanding Stratton give the title back before she takes it from her. Which was the cue for Bayley out in her ring gear. I'm sure that won't lead anywhere. Naomi and Bianca Belair. God, they're all in the ring gear. I wonder if this is gonna... A ring full of potential contenders. Tiffy hitting her prettiest moonsault ever onto all of them. When out came Aldis. It's like, oh, good thing they're all in their ring gear. Jests his fellow countryman on commentary. That meant we could just fortunately swing into a number one contenders match of Nia Jax versus Bayley versus Naomi versus Bianca Belair. a quick wee back and forth between the four. Nice to see that it didn't fall into the two in the ring flow for the majority that we often see in WWE. Bayley and Nia getting a longer period, but as soon as Nia climbed to Brett's rope, the tag team champions were back in for an awesome corner powerbomb, with Bayley getting Samoa dropped on top. Like, looked great, appeared to ace the fall too. Bianca and Bayley were our two lasses to finally jolt up the pace. Like, the two with a lovely quick little sequence. Like, don't worry, we're back to Nia Jax after a minute. Don't get too concerned that we're kicking up the pace for a second and we're just gonna like, oh wow, we're actually gonna get some really quick wrestling and maybe it'll just kick up into no, we're gonna slow immediately right back down. let's not go too far. But this time it was for everyone to jump on her. Springboard moonsault, Bayley elbow, 450 winding Bianca. Like, oh, the way she landed, you could just immediately, she's like, fuck. It's just like, you take a minute. Candice eventually jogged on down to play coach. Bianca and Naomi made the active decision to not wrestle each other, and the flow that followed kicked into our ending. Finisher spamming into broken up pins, which I then realised was all in the ad break to get the crowd cheering for the return. It's like, oh, one of the better parts of the match wasn't even on air. That just caught me off guard. The final flow, Candice held onto Bianca's braid, letting go for an accidental whip into Naomi. You imagine the physics on that. Nia and Bianca went over the announce desk for Bayley to quickly reverse Naomi into a rose plant for the win. Our Bayley again trusted to give the new champion her first defence. They did a little bit more of a build on Monday Night Raw as well, like using the Netflix platform to try and get people to tune into the TV. But yeah, this was just a quick impromptu match. For me, this was desperately needed on the show just because I wasn't super into SmackDown. I was watching it at this point, and this match was like, oh yeah, I'll enjoy some bit of wrestling. It was fine. And let's stay with the women and talk about the Women's United States Championship. Chelsea Green versus Meechin Miryim. My first smackers since Chelsea won the title, so I had a little chuckle watching Piper play security. Didn't know she was doing that, I just found it funny. No entrance for Mia didn't exactly fill me with hope that these two would be given much time. A perfectly fine match with the 5 minutes they had. Chelsea retaining with a roll-up off rolling through after a Yim crossbody. Not in a, I'm an idiot that somehow retained, and more in a standard competent reversal kind of way. Like, to be honest, that is the exact kind of progression I'd like to see for Chelsea's character. From idiot heel to someone who, in their matches, will start to do the odd competent thing, and those levels of competency start to improve in the actual wrestling. She herself can still be the same character, but in the ring you start to see moments of competency creeping in. From idiot heel to at least semi-competent competitor. But there isn't much to say actually about the actual title defence. Wasn't given a lot of time. They did what they could. Other notes, we got a lengthy recap of the Netflix show to start us off. Always good to see the runtime and then immediately be able to skip the first 5 minutes. It's like, there we go, 2:25 now, we've cut out five. It's already less. I was sitting there thinking that, unlike the Raw show, I was like, well, it's fine. I don't think we're actually getting anything special in the ad breaks. And I was feeling like, oh, I think Netflix are just kind of cutting them out. But I knew it was 2 hours. Like, but you can't be then. There must actually be stuff here. Yeah, it turns out I was actually just getting the match and not realizing it was a break. It does mean my version of SmackDown was 2 hours and 4 minutes compared to the 80 to 90 minutes for the rest of you. But it also meant that it was so kind of like naturally integrated that I didn't even notice. With a big asterisk of, I am writing notes whilst I am watching this. So my attention isn't firmly on it the whole time. And to be fair, it's designed almost WWE TV product to half watch it, as in you'll be watching it but you'll also be on your phone. Makes it perfect a match for Netflix. And my final note is that poor Eldis found himself in a room with 8 tag lads, making us 2 matches that both found themselves in this section. First, Los Garza of Legado de Fantasma faced Pretty Deadly. Yes, boys on Netflix in the UK! They did not win. Come on, DIY. None love for the boys. The second was Motor City Machine Guns versus Theory and Waller. I still don't know if I'm meant to feel like the tag team are important. They go through a period where they feel important, and then they kind of just push back down again. I guess they're not important then. It's weird. They haven't managed to maintain the balance. But SmackDown overall is kind of similar to how I felt with Raw this week, where technically there were matches which should feel important to have my interest, because there's title matches on this show. When actually watching the show, it feels somewhat standard. Like the both United States Championship matches, one was short on time and the other one ended in an interference, so didn't get a finish. Like, it's very, very almost like standard WWE style matches anyway. So the title being on the line didn't actually mean anything, even though technically they can advertise it and they can draw people in and be like, oh, you got title matches that you can see. Isn't that special for the first SmackDown sits in Netflix era? We've got title matches, we've got big stuff happening. Guess the biggest thing really was the announcement of Roman Reigns being in the Rumble. That was pretty big. But Raw had the same thing, where after the big week last week, or the big Monday Night Raw at least, this week's shows just didn't feel like they were keeping up that super special feel. It didn't feel like they went anywhere near all guns blazing, but with the current roster. It was more like they gave everything into that Netflix debut. And then this was like, oh, if you like WWE, this is going to carry on a bit more. Monday Night Raw was almost a very, very standard episode of Raw. I was like, oh, I thought we were going to get like a big increase in momentum to go into for the second Raw. But really, the second Raw felt very similar to what we were getting before the Netflix era. Well, let's jump on into it. Let's jump on over to San Jose, California for week two live on Netflix for Monday Night Raw.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE NY 467369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
And I see that John Cena has declared himself for the Royal Rumble. But live and in living color, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that so am I. CM Punk 2025 is going to throw 29 other people over the top rope, whether they think that he can see them or not. And I'm going to raise my hand, and I'm going to point to that sign, and you're going to hear my music, Cult of Personality, play my song.
Burn it down!
That's not his song, Cole!
Victorious from last week, CM Punk kicked us off, walking through backstage, continuing to stack the Royal Rumble with the biggest names they've got. In a rare circumstance, he actually got to finish what he had to say, like in a WWE promo segment. That's unheard of. Hyping himself up to win the Rumble, play my music, when instead, burn it down, echoes out instead. Sethy's got a boo-boo, taking off his shades to reveal his black eye. I'd rather be the worst version of me than any version of you. A nice little mirror for where Seth's character seems to be toiling this WrestleMania season. Promising to flush CM Punk's WrestleMania dreams down the toilet. Sounding a lot like a certain Scotsman was sounding last year. Before Seth declares himself for the Royal Rumble 2. And speaking of the Scotsman, making me think that line was definitely on purpose, Drew McIntyre grumpily joined the party. The proper aggravator for the segment, getting them both vying for a fight. Drew McIntyre is set on Roman Reigns, though. I did laugh at him calling the Ulafala the Falafella. I think he called it the Falafella. Not getting sidetracked and caught up in fights he didn't need to engage in. Unlike the other lads. Didn't work. the match made for next week. But still, on this night. Also, he declared for the Rumble with the promise of not forgetting the threat the original Bloodline poses to the company. Later in the show was when Rollins was interviewed backstage as Seth vs. Drew was announced for next week. The man running into Sami Zayn, a Canadian who is too kind for his own good. Rollins ran on him about still backing Roman. There was a lot of, when Roman isn't there, the characters must be talking about Roman energy about this. They must be telling us what they think about Roman. there's a lot of that energy about, like, yeah. Cody's got the championship, but let there be no illusion that he's still the main character. And speaking of mains, let's jump straight over to the main event. Damian Priest versus Finn Balor. Just because I've already talked about what I did with the Rumble earlier, so there's not really much point me going into it now. Let's instead go in on the street fight. A match in the middle of the bubbling friction in the current Judgment Day, set up in the aftermath of Liv losing her title last week. The match, anything goes, time for your tables, kendo sticks, chairs, and I guess the new reinforced announce desk. That thing looks unforgiving to take a bump on. Like, I guess thoughts out to you, WWE contracted wrestlers. I do watch this and go, why are we still here? Like, nothing seems to be progressing, just eternally trapped in this fallout with no real plans to move on. The crowd just wanted their tables, so they were happy regardless. I'm somewhat holding hope that the way the commentators were talking, the way that the match ended, the way that the finish was kind of put across of, that's it, done. This is it, done. And now Damien Priest, he went out to him himself for the Royal Rumble, and maybe we'll start to move into Damien Priest WrestleMania plans or something. I feel like it's a big idea for him to have a singles match, given the year that he's just had. The match went for a walk and brawl up into the crowd for one damn mighty Falcon's Arrow from like 7 or 8 rows up. The held up stall from Priest made this look both awesome and absolutely devastating to take for Finn. Fully trusting the Irishman, like 15 feet up. So trusting, just to be like, not only are we going to do this 50 feet up, I'm going to trust you to like properly hold me for a second and then we'll crash down. Like that's, yeah. Finn, you crazy man. Like honestly, it looked like they landed the best they could. Like immediately stretchering Balor up, which looked pretty odd during the ad break as we got to watch them wheel him further into the arena to be in the proper spot for the return shot, I guess. Just kind of hard to suspend my disbelief when I watch them move the stretcher to the actor's mark so they're within the shot and then they then they go to air. It's like, I watched them move to position where I was like, Finn is in, he's so hurt. It's like, oh, he's got to be put in a stretcher. It's like, but I watched you wheel him towards the ramp rather than leave the arena. My disbelief not being able to be suspended. But to show just in terms of like the high difficulty level of this match and just like seemingly everything just working. Like even the stretcher push to send Finn back into the ring looked like it went perfectly. Like the thing just spinning perfectly aligned so he could roll in with a flow of ease. Like kudos to them. There was a lot that could have gone wrong, but it was just like everything was going right for them on this night. JD and Carlito out for the numbers odds and to work the furniture. Balor's coup de grace kicked out of to help us into the War Raiders run out and evening of the odds. Both Balor and Priest out on their feet for the closing stretch. Honestly, it really worked. I'm tired of the feud, but this match was their best singles outing by far. South of Heaven, whilst Damien had a chair wrapped around his neck, got a this is awesome. Ringside for Dickens, as we had a tale of two tables. Coup de grace through one, that seemed to jar Finn's back. Great, given the barricade spot was next. If anything went wrong, it was literally just the way that he landed on the coup de grace onto Damien Priest. It kind of just slipped a bit. Priest sending the Irishman to fly with a razor's edge through the other table. This is awesome again, and South of Heaven in the ring as Cole called that this was Priest ending things with Balor once and for all. One of those where they did the biggest spot earlier in the beginning before the ad break, and obviously the match could never really reach those quite literal heights again, but they sold the toll pretty damn well. I won't lie, I'm not ruling out me enjoying this because of being grateful it wasn't just another WWE plunder like the Tribal Warfare was last week, but I did enjoy myself. I enjoyed myself. Yeah, I had a good time. I had fun with it. The Women's Intercontinental Championship Tournament Final, Dakota Kai versus Lyra Valkyria. My first time hearing Dakota Kai's new theme, I still just get gut reactions of, oh well. Both women killed it though. nailing an awesome looking suplex off the apron as the ad break lead in. That thud as they hit the ringside mat sounded, oof. No wonder Valkyria was holding her back if they practiced that earlier. Little bloody hell. Also, huzzah! You managed to get a WWE crowd invested in a bit of stretch action during the ad break. Proof you're doing a great job making a WWE crowd care about the actual wrestling. The way Lyra just double foot kicked the Kiwi off the stretch in a pop across the ring was awesome too. What I learned here was that it feels far easier to stay invested in these TV matches when I get to stay with the action. Like, I had a great time with this match. Thought the two had a great little WWE telly match. Like, they felt the importance and were given the time to actually play. I liked the finishing flow too. Kicked into quite literally with Kai nailing her GTK, only for the Irish Bird Lady to roll to the outside, meaning the corner kick after it took too long and the Irish lass snapped in for the win in the end. So yeah, Lyra Valkyria is your first women's intercontinental champion. And again, for me, this is what you use the title for. Use it for a not as established talent to really start building themselves up, or somebody that you do want to elevate, or at least test elevating. And I feel like Chelsea Green and Lyra Valkyria are two kinds of talent that they obviously want to see if they can elevate. So yeah, for me, that's perfect. It's also, it's way better to elevate someone from NXT into, so you don't have to try and get them like a big storyline or a big moment with a champion or former champion. It's like, no, you got something to fight over now. A prove yourself title. Always, it's been needed for the women for a while, especially with how WWE tell their stories or like to build their characters. Because there's been an issue if there's no title to fight over, the women struggle to get TV time. And with the women's tag team championships, it's like they don't really care. So, like, the actual treatment of those titles, they don't have that much pedigree. Speaking of pedigree, I guess I don't really know what the link is here. Penta's WWE debut. Quick note, with me getting the European feed, I got to see Chad Gable working up the crowd instead of an ad break. A lovely little treat. A nice opportunity to advertise NXT and SmackDown being on Netflix in those markets too. Once Chad Gable was done, the graphics came up on screen going, oh, by the way, most markets outside of the US and certain countries, like, you will be able to watch NXT and SmackDown as well. It's not just Raw. Anyway, as for the actual debut for the Mystery Luchador, it was the worst kept secret in the business, called Cole accurately on commentary, mostly because WWE added him to their own online roster page. So it's not exactly a badly kept secret if you have accidentally promoted it in some way. His kids, his family crying on the front row. Like, it was just nice to see them wiping away tears as they filmed him on their phones. Like, no, like the reverse Jimmy Uso, if you will. Absolute commitment to paying attention and so happy for them. Get off your phone. Stero Miero ringing out as Penta locked up with Gable. Pat saying he'd seen him on the internet, seen him on TV. Like, gasp, these people have watched AEW. How dare? The enemy. A perfectly okay debut. A decent showcase of Penta without being anything blow away to have him instantly grab your attention or anything. You just got to see him, like, how he is in the ring. What really did help for me was the crowd. This was the right crowd to debut him in front of. They loved the Mexican Destroyer, but I'm not entirely sure consistently slowing down the pace, having the lad receive a leg offense on his debut. I don't know if that's like a pedantic thing or if that's something that doesn't really matter, like I'm making a mountain of a molehill, but I think I would have just preferred a get Penta's characters and moves across to a new audience, just because he's so unique if you literally just put him on a platform. Another critique for me for AEW was I loved Penta as a singles wrestler so much. It's just a shame we never really got to see it. And the one little test we got, I wouldn't really call his folks. The whole being creepy behind a tombstone, Alex Amarantes and his manager. There's a lot of work done in AEW to remove the cool. Kind of like, yeah, that singles run, As soon as he's back with Phoenix, like, we were back on track because obviously they're amazing. But here's an opportunity. Like, Phoenix isn't going to be there for quite some time. So you have got an opportunity here to make Penta cool Penta again, and they were constantly calling him the second best luchador in the world on commentary, which I guess they were in some way, though, because Rey Mysterio's there, like, he's the number one, and they consistently build him as that legend, so maybe in their minds they're like, oh, we can't be number one, we can't say that, so let's say he's number two. But as soon as you do that, that means people are immediately comparing him to Rey, which means you have to do a match at some point. You're putting it in their minds by doing that. Anyway, it's not that big a deal. I just don't know whether it was a good or bad idea to have him face Chad Gable, just because it meant it was a contested match rather than a full showcase match. It still was a showcase match. The arm snap spot full-on branded The Sacrifice. It got a decent reaction and they popped huge for the Penta driver win. The man got a post-match interview. So I don't actually know if this was on air, but he got a post-match interview with Jackie in the ring. Penta was given the mic to thank San Jose, calling WWE's new home, shouting that the truth is he's been waiting for this special moment. But the bit that really clicked was when San Jose loved him addressing them in Spanish. And you could immediately just feel like that's the Penta that I remember from Lucha Underground, just having that passion, having that complete unique way of delivery. Like, oh, when he speaks in Spanish, you immediately feel it. It just clicks. It immediately clicks. Which meant that San Jose was totally the right crowd for this debut. Speaking of foreigners, Gunther. What's the World Heavyweight Champion up to? I'd be forgiven in forgetting he's in this position, given he is, well, it doesn't feel like he's even close to being a focus off this big Netflix jump. But what did you think of the Netflix debut? Like, our champion wasn't impressed by the in-ring efforts. Everyone's fighting over some personal drama. Who cares? Building up to Jey Uso coming out to have a lovely yeet with the crowd. Sure, his win-loss record isn't that great, and it could be questionable whether he should go for the title, but he just loves to entertain. Therefore, he should get it, guys. He just loves to entertain. Jey Uso isn't the contender for the Rumble. He's the lad for Saturday night's main event, which, you know what? That's absolutely grand. He's the perfect level of lad for a champion to beat on a TV showcase like that. A nice reaction from Gunther telling the man to listen to him because they wrestled back when the Ring General was Intercontinental Champion. I know what you're capable of, and it's a whole lot less than I'm capable of. Hitting on the "you're just a really talented tag team wrestler" notes nice and swiftly before just popping off. Hey, Jey got his nice moment when the champ was on the ramp though. I'm not meant to be here. I'm just a tag team guy. I'm not meant to be selling all this merch. But it's not just a nickname, because this is where I belong. Jey Uso is the main event. And he delivered it really well. It felt like it was like earnest in its passion. I felt like this did a really good job in at least making you care about the match. I've immediately degraded Saturday night's main event to a decently fun, very easy to watch showcase. So for me, Jey Uso is perfect to be an opponent for Gunther in a show that is like that. And one last thing for Rhea Ripley, because she's finally the new Women's World Heavyweight Champion once again. Got to have her celebratory moment in the ring. But on came out Nia Jax to moan and antagonise everyone, bringing Bayley into things to properly get our plug for the upcoming title match on Smackers. It's not Bayley's show, but San Jose is Bayley's city, and they're using the Netflix stage to get you to tune in on Friday. Aside from the fact that she's not wrestling Nia, they're doing some form of thing of, oh, is Nia actually drafted to Raw? They've not made it super clear. And I guess that was their in to feature a bit of SmackDown stuff. Jumping to other notes, a show where the Netflix audience got introduced to a lot of the show's like building and supporting characters. Sheamus made his first Netflix outing against Kaiser. Sheamus got the win and had a heated ringside stare down afterwards with Bron Breakker. And in terms of the extra stuff for us Europeans in the ad breaks, we got an in-ring arena interview with Jackie interviewing JD and Carlito ahead of Balor's street fight. Another note was it's properly odd to see NFL footage but not hear the NFL plug. Same with seeing the Snickers logo on the barricade. Just with crowd ambiance. There's no audible Snickers plug, but we see it on there because they're muting the commentary audio whenever they plug something or they advertise something. We got San Jose's own Bayley in the crowd, plugging her title match with Tiffy, getting the crowd up for the women's intercontinental title match that was just about to happen. Her ribbing on Cole was good fun though. Like, hey, you big idiot, this is my hometown, so you better say nice things about me. New Day again in the outside US spot, continuing to add on that sentiment of the two being ostracized from the WWE lads, promising to be on the telly next week. We also got a bit of Ray Ray in the crowd with Jackie before the main event. Oh, also, Sammy and The Miz had a match. Good for them, kinda nothing for us. I feel like they felt like they had to showcase Sammy. As we're saying, this was a show where they were showcasing all of the other characters that they didn't really put on the show last week. So they felt like Sammy is one of those characters that we have to showcase in episode 2. But they had nothing for him. And this match was like a complete waste of time. It did nothing for me. If anything, it lowers Sammy a bit. That yes, you get to showcase him. But surely you have to be actually something substantial for him to do. Otherwise, what's the point? You somewhat kind of degrade where he would feel in the rankings of the roster. Like, yeah, it was a win. As soon as it was happening, I was in my mind, I'm like, I can skip this. I can just skip this. This time could have been used for something else, but like far better, far better dedicated. It's like things happened. There were pops to be had. What happens when the pop stops? There were pops to be had. Penta's debut got more announcements for the Rumble. Yeah, the main event that I genuinely did enjoy. I also enjoyed the Women's Intercontinental Championship match. Like, there was stuff here. But overall, watching the show, it felt like a pretty standard episode of Raw. which I feel like almost was an interesting choice given that there was an opportunity to really carry over the momentum from last week but try and do it with current stars. So yeah, I'm kind of like somewhat surprised that we got two somewhat standard shows in reply to the Netflix special last week. It's like, oh, I thought we'd like at least carry something. I wasn't expecting them to be at that level. I was always expecting a drop for episode 2 and then you build up a little bit for episode 3, and I guess episode 4 is like right before the Rumble. So there's a decent flow. I just thought this episode of Raw would have a lot stronger of a punch to it, and it kind of didn't. Like, it was fine. It was okay. It was absolutely okay. Anyway, that does bring me to the end of the show. The end of a relatively standard week for WWE. To be fair, like even with AEW Dynamite this week, I was like, it was all right. Like, sometimes that happens with wrestling. It's not the end of the world. Sometimes you'll watch a show, you'll enjoy parts of it, but at the end of it, you're like, the wrestling didn't bang this week. it's still entertaining. I'm still a wrestling fan. It's not going to break anything. It's like, yeah. Three episodes of wrestling television that were absolutely fine. And I get on with my life, I do stuff. So I'm absolutely fine with my wrestling not then making me go online and go, oh my God, whilst talking to people. It's like, no, I can just get on with my day. That's all right. Sometimes that is absolutely fine. I don't need to be engaged 24/7, Fortnite. I don't need to be engaged all the time. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about more Smackers and Monday Night Raw. With that, I say thank you for liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never taken for granted. There is a unique feed for this podcast now, which has officially been done. Big shout out to those behind the scenes at Sir Suplex that finally got that going. It's got a few episodes on there. I want to say maybe 4 or 5, which I've been adding over the course of time. So if you want to support me specifically, you can go over there and help support. But also, if you want to support everybody, there is the main Social Suplex feed with all of us on there. So you can get every single show that we put out on a weekly basis. I feel like I'm part of a really good kind of like unit and a team at the moment. Last year was almost mental in terms of something cool seemed to happen every single month. And then December might be more chill until bloody Tunnel Talk got the Young Bucks. Okay, December had a cool thing too. So yeah, I felt like 2024 was a really fun year to be a part of this network. It felt like they kind of came together in a quite special way. Just like you could really feel that we've got something here. But anyway, optimistic lookout for 2025. So with that, I say thank you and I bid you adieu. I'll see you next week. Adios.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.